You're listening to the Thank God for Nostra podcast.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Thank God for Nostra. Today I'm sitting down with our favorite Nostra developer and CTO of Nostra, Pablo. How are you doing this morning / evening, Pablo?
Doing fantastic. Very happy, nervous to be here.
But yeah, and I are happy to be here. Opposite sides of the world. It's 6:40 a.m. right now, and Pablo's kids are about to go to bed.
Dinner and bedtime. But bedtime for me, it takes about 6 hours. So I'm usually either getting ready for bedtime on bedtime or right after bedtime.
Yeah, I know that feeling for sure, dude. So to introduce Pablo, for any of you who aren't aware, he is he's a prolific Nostra developer, working full-time on the protocol. He has authored such projects as Exit.pub, Shipyard.pub, Zapster.live, Highlighter, NDK, Vendata, Fomoster, NSEC Bunker, GotNostra.com, and, you know, probably 20 or 30 other ones. I figured I'd start with following up on some of the new projects. I was going to ask you how Exit.pub is going, but then you released something new. So Shipyard, what's the latest? How's that all coming?
Shipyard is already.
No. I mean, so today I decided to go back to Highlighter because I basically abandoned Highlighter for a while. But I have like a complete rewrite of Highlighter that I finished. Sort of finished, you know, like 99% done, maybe 3 months ago, but I've never released it. So I'm working on that to release it in probably 5 or 6 days. It's pretty cool. Like, it does a bunch of really cool things. So I'm super pumped about that. But yeah, Shipyard is going super well. I'm very excited about it. I have a million ideas on stuff that I want to add to it, which is very, very exciting. But yeah, it's funny because Shipyard, there are some products that I've seen other people launch many, many years ago, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, stuff like that. And there is one product that I really liked, which was like a Twitter writing platform called Typefully.app. And it's just like a place to construct the threads, right, for Twitter. And I always love the simplicity of it. It's like a very micro app approach. You go in just to write, and you have your draft. And I use that app a whole lot. And Shipyard is a bit of my take on doing that for Nostra. I have a lot of really cool ideas. When I launched Shipyard, I actually thought that people weren't going to like it, and they were going to be like, I don't know, triggered by the idea of, oh, it's not as genuine because you're not writing when you're publishing. And I actually expected some backlash. But
yeah, people are very enthusiastic about it. Like David Bennett like mentions it on his show every single time, and he's just like, his face is melted off by how useful it is. So that's awesome.
Dude, I've been listening to his podcast for a really long time. And I really like the guy. He's like one of my favorite Bitcoin podcasters, because he's like this very, I don't know, genuine, transparent. He sucks at marketing, but in a very cool way, he sucks at marketing. And he's just out of the blue, he started talking about Shipyard. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I have tried to take a page out of your book on occasion and write my own like side projects and try to be like, generally as prolific. But like, it's interesting how like the talent you have for putting together things that are genuinely useful and original. You know, I built like Zephyr and like some sort of proof of concepts for the encrypted messaging stuff and a calendar app, but they're all features. Right. You know, they're products that are just dumb features. And so they don't really have like, a full user experience. But you put out stuff that is actually like really useful. And like about Shipyard, it's kind of interesting. Like, so I played around with it a little bit, and the scheduled posts is pretty straightforward. Do you have like recurring posts where you can like have it automatically repost at certain times of the day?
So not yet. You have to schedule that manually. So you can publish it, you can schedule it, and at the time of schedule, you can say repost this in 6 hours or whatever. Some other trigger. I am going to make it so that you can place stuff in a queue. So the queues have different settings. Like a queue is you write a bunch of notes. And they will go at a certain cadence. So every 1 hour, every 1 day, whatever it might be. And you, within the configuration of that queue, you can say, not yet, but you will be able to say, okay, publish every 12 hours. And 3 hours after publishing that thing, repost it. And even if you schedule, you'll understand like the nuance of this. If you schedule the repost of something that has not been published, it will do it properly with a kind 6 with a tag of the right note ID, the relay hints, like all those things.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I was thinking about this the other day because Coracle doesn't use reposts. I have no support for reposts at all, and I don't think they're good because like just a regular repost is like, hey guys, I didn't want to put in the effort, but you should read this because it'll be good for you to read. And, because that's like, I think that's generally the attitude that people use with retweets. And so I left it out and I'm seeing how it goes. But like, this is a pretty valid use case for it where you basically are saying, here's this really important thing and I want to draw attention to it throughout, the different time zones that my followers are in so that they don't miss it. And, that's just one way to sort of solve that problem.
Yeah, that's the main that was the main thing I had in mind. I have not written it yet, but so for the way FOMoster works, so it's like a data vending machine based tool that will find content that your audience would have liked or they subbed or they reposted but you didn't see, and defining you didn't see is the hard part, right? Because just the fact that you didn't interact with an event that or a note doesn't mean that you didn't see it. And the way I'm
most
defining
people are lurkers.
Most people are lurkers. Yeah. So what I'm doing is I am creating time windows where you did something. So for example, if you interacted with you signed an event, you liked something or you reposted or subbed something. At moment 0, and then you reposted something at moment 15, at minute 15, then I assume that was like a 15-minute time window in which you were active. So in that way, I can create this analysis of at what times different people were active. So what I'm going to add to Shipyard is this ability of analyze the your audience within time cohorts, right? So the people that are active at 9 a.m. Eastern time and the people that are active at whatever, 9 p.m. Pacific time or something like that. So that you are able to schedule reposts based on those schedules, based on the natural time that people are active throughout the day. Because right now we say, okay, 3 hours,
Once there's enough interaction on Noster, you can basically see like when do my you can A/B test that too. You can say like when do my reposts get the most interactions and zaps? Well, let's shoot for that time, And that marketing best practices go down to the day too. Always post on Tuesday or whatever it is.
Exactly. Yes. 100%. One of the things that I will do, it's just a little bit weird, but because most people will just use it with Jack, which kind of sucks. But but one of the things that I want to be able to do is publish something when that person is online, right? Because maybe I want to respond to a note to you or to Will, for example. Will gets like a bunch of notifications. And maybe I'm going to create my response, but it might get buried in a bunch of other notifications that he would get. And I could schedule it so that it gets published when he signs an event and he proves that his keys are online. So that's one thing that I want to do, like send this DM when the person is online, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, every time I think about building that, then I think, yeah, 99% of people are just going to use this to to hound on Jack, and that's going to be like a really shitty experience.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, like, you know, you're talking about basically monitoring user usage, but you don't have control over the client. And so you have to like revert to these more more kind of primitive methods of figuring out when someone is doing something. That's super interesting. Do you have any like privacy concerns about Nostr? I wrote an article about, you know, user data harvesting being open on Nostr a while ago. What are your thoughts on that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was called "Let's Not Build a Digital Panopticon." Okay.
Oh, I need to read that. Yeah, I have a lot of concerns about the privacy of Nostr, because one of the things I actually wrote a note maybe like a month or 2 months ago, saying something like Recnalysis, like Rec, like REQ, Recnalysis is going to be a $1 billion industry.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of things that you can, like, clients are really. Not even bad. They just don't pay any kind of attention to try to hide or diffuse what they are doing when they're talking to the relays. So relays, like, we have this open network where all the events are public and whatever, but the requests that we send, the queries that we send to relays, that is not public in a way, right? Like, only the relays are seeing that. So a relay would be very trivially able to see that you are stalking this one person, or, you know, like obsessed on with these two folks, right? And I, yeah, that, like, I think we it's something that I want to do some research on how to create the request at the NDK level, so that I can find the right balance in between getting all the data that the application is requesting, but not being so obvious with the relay. Like, if I know that a relay is going to have data for pub key A, B, and C, maybe I don't need to ask for absolutely everything for pub key A, B, and C to all the relays. Maybe I can, you know, like you do with the pagination, like I can do something like that where I request different type of data from the different type of relay, so it's not so obvious what's going on. But yeah, that part concerns me. I know. Oh, actually, yeah, Semisol is public about this. So I know that Semisol is is doing analysis on his relays on this type of data. And yeah, like, all these requests that you're sending can be recorded, you know. So yeah, I have huge privacy concerns. At the same time, it's kind of like, and I know you are on the other side of the of this argument, but the metadata issue with the DMs. I mean, it's a big tongue in cheek, my opinion on this, but the fact that Twitter and Facebook and the which is a different way of saying the NSA has had this metadata forever. Like, they know who you are talking to. Maybe they say that it's end-to-end encrypted, beautiful, but they do have this metadata. Now everybody has the metadata. In a way, it's not the worst. It's different. The privacy concerns, yeah, are just different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think in general, there's been a lack of awareness with regards to how much data we are leaking and how much of our behavior is trivially observable. It used to be that you needed to be in a very privileged position to be able to observe the behavior. And now everybody in some way can kind of observe it.
Yeah, and it's finally, but yeah, it's finally becoming common knowledge. People are starting to freak out about NIP4 DMs and are stopping using them. So what do you think about Vitor's gift wrap DMs solution? Is Semisol right? Should we just throw it all away and use SimpleX, or is there a use case for private messages on Nostr?
I don't know. I'm sort of not super inclined to fix it at the Nostr level. Like I don't see, like, the moment you're storing all this data on relays, you need to get very creative, and GitRab is a creative way of doing it, but you need to get very creative to overcome a design. This, if we were to implement DMs from first principles, we wouldn't implement the relay infrastructure in this way, right? We would go with something that looks much more like Simplex or something different or whatever, Signal or something like that. So it feels to me like a little bit of a shoehorning just because of the graph data. So to me, it makes more sense to use the graph data as a synchronization mechanism to find the, to do the negotiation, to find the different channel. But yeah, I mean, from the get-go, I assume that every piece of digital communication I do is always public, because you can always just take a screenshot,
yeah,
right? Like, you can just always go to the screenshot.
Yeah.
And people will trust in, like, the fact that it's signed by your key, it doesn't really matter, because people will trust the screenshot to an outstanding degree. So I don't see it being such big of a problem. But if we're going to fix it in this way, I would just go, okay, let's just move that very private communication to a different protocol. Because doing it on Nostr feels like a bit of an in-between, like a stopgap solution. It's not super private, even with the GIF wrapping. It's not super private. It's complex. There is a better solution if we go from to first principles. So yeah, I don't know, but the GIF wraps are interesting for sure.
Yeah, my take on this is basically, yeah, like, Nostr is not good for DMs, and we probably shouldn't be. Nostr shouldn't be marketed as a privacy technology. It's just that privacy is kind of like the category that everyone has for freedom technology. It is freedom technology, but it is not privacy technology. And, you know, from a UX perspective, I think we do need DMs of some kind integrated, even if it's not on the Nostr protocol. Something where, you know, Nostr users can get a hold of each other regardless of what client they're using. But then, yeah, like, secret, really encrypted, secure communication should be done somewhere else. And, like, Nostr shouldn't try to do that and shouldn't try to brand itself as being encrypted. And so, like, client authors just need to be careful about how they describe their direct messaging features, so that no one has the wrong idea about how secure they are. So I think Simplex maybe has a place, maybe something else. And like, my interest in gift wraps is to have semi-private, you know, groups, which is like, it's a whole different thing, you know, where you have like a fairly still diffuse set of people who are operating on relays. Like, the relay model actually makes sense in that case. And maybe you could, like, even do it with just trusted relays and not even worry about the encryption side of things. But with the gift wraps and the screenshots sort of topic, you know, like, content producers who produce, you know, private content for Patreon groups or whatever, all they really want is, like, the bare minimum of friction to actually sharing that content. So, like, you know, they'll often share a website with, like, a code in the URL query parameters. That's not anywhere near secure. It's a reused code. All you need to do is just share that link, and anyone has access to it. But it's actually enough to, like, protect their business model. So, I think that's kind of, it's acceptable, right? It shouldn't. It's not considered nuclear grade encryption or anything, but but it'll do okay.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think the encrypted group chats is a different category.
Yeah,
you don't have the same expectation. So I think it wrapping makes sense for that. Someone proposed, because there is, I think it was the Task Tiger people, that they're doing the data vending machines, and apparently some of their users were complaining that the requests they were sending to the DVMs were plain text, and they were complaining about the privacy, and most, I think mostly they were complaining because they're using that to create logos and stuff like that. So they were complaining that they wanted to launch, say you want to launch the new version of Coracle, and you're creating the logo using ADVM, and you want it to be a surprise, right? You want it to be a launch. You don't want the design of the logo to leak before time. So it's not privacy in the sense of that you are exchanging nuclear codes. You simply don't want it to be trivially accessible. But it's not like a metadata kind of issue. And yeah, they sent a pull request, and I think they were looking into gift wraps. I haven't really looked at the PR yet, but
yeah,
I think they were sending the idea is to use gift wraps for that to communicate with the different data DBMs.
That's interesting. I think you could pull that off without too much trouble. I mean, the only thing is that you'd have to address the gift wrap to the DVM's pub key so that it could decrypt it and then give it a callback pub key to encrypt to. So one interesting thing about gift wraps is like zaps are basically impossible in a gift wrapped setting because you need that trusted server to be able to issue a zap receipt. And if it doesn't have access to the key for the gift wrap, then it just can't do that. And so you just like, you can't really zap inside a gift wrap context. So there's...
Yeah, to me, the private zaps never made that much sense.
No. The zap because spec is just
the idea of
so
the
nasty.
Zap is that it's public.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, just pay someone if you know that you've got their lightning
vault
out of URL and stuff. Yeah. Does Bolt 12 fix this? I was looking into zap splits and it's just so gross. I decided not to implement it. You know, LNURL is just not the right tool for the job, but. Do you think Bolt 12? I don't know anything about Bolt 12. I need to read about it, but is that going to help with the zaps?
Yeah,
awkwardness?
I hope Bolt 12 can fix my internet connection because I missed the question.
Yeah. I was just looking into zap splits. They're just such an awkward thing with LNURL that I decided not to implement them. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's like zaps are not a huge part of Coracle. It's not really what I am focusing on right now. And with zap splits, you know, you have multiple chained requests. So you have to dereference a bunch of stuff against servers that may or may not actually respond. So you have like, you have latency. And then, you know, what if one of the zappers is invalid? How do you like redistribute those zap balances? I mean, it's not that hard, but then the spec is written so that, you know, some of them can have a proportion and some of them might not. And then you just ignore the ones that don't. And it's like, it's so loose that, I was just like, no, forget it. I'm not spending a day on this.
isn't the proportion mandatory? I thought it was mandatory.
No,
that's the way
it's optional. You can, and then of course, you know, Wavelake also, not to call anyone out in particular, but they use a non-standard version of zap splits. So it has like a completely different tag format with the same tag. But, and I was adding zap splits because I wanted to, you know, make it possible to zap the artists who I'm, you know, playing their music on Coracle from Wavelake's relay. But I support Wavelake's non-standard zap splits, and I don't support normal zap splits.
Yeah, see, I mean that's a bit of a philosophical question, but I don't think we should support this non-standard way of doing things. Like I think these, in very few decisions like this, it will lead us to such protocol bloat that it will be impossible to, like, if it doesn't work, if they are doing non-standard events, we should just public shaming. Or just say, if your users say, oh, this doesn't work on Coracle, maybe just display in a very public shaming way, just display, this user is using a non-Noster client. They are breaking the spec. But, you know, like, it's a silly example, but what happened with display name and all the different...
That's a good example.
Ways of,
very clear.
Writing the display name, it's such a mess, right? On NDK, I did implement all the different kinds of display name. When we had the discussion a few weeks ago, I just took it out because I think it's a bad idea. If they don't have a client that is writing the right name on the kind zero, then just, you don't have a name. You're just a pub key.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I think I do agree with that position. It's just like, it's harder to actually be principled about it and build a UI around a feature that you could support, but you're not going to. And, you know, you wrote that post a couple days ago or like yesterday or something about if Nostr fails, what killed it? And I mean, protocol bloat is definitely a question. I mean, have we seen, well, the most comparable protocol probably is like the internet, is like HTML and browsers competing against one another and just adding new features that everyone else has to have parity with. And you end up using Chrome's, you know, WebKit flagged prefixes or whatever. And then, you know, all the other browsers are struggling to keep up, or, you know, Safari purposely doesn't implement certain things. I don't see how we're going to avoid something like that. Freezing the spec. Well, you know, I saw Fiat Jaff actually really liked Will's take on forking the repo and removing a lot of extra stuff. I don't even know what to think about that. That sounds scary, but we definitely can't just keep going the way that we are.
It sounds pretty radical. I mean, the way you see it at the moment, we are so damn early that we are still at the point where all these small decisions, they have a very significant impact. So like we discussed earlier with the display name and the subsplits, if we normalize just supporting someone else's broken implementation, then we are just ossifying around the idea of just do whatever and we'll support it. One of the things that I think we're really lucky is that we don't currently have one client, which is what happened with the browser wars, one client that has enough market share to dictate what the specs look like. If Deimos or Amethyst or Coracle were to have 90-80% of the market share, and you just decided, I'm just going to create this new tag, like go Arthur Franca on us and just start creating a bunch of million new tags and then impose those on the rest of the developers, that would be incredibly bad. We are lucky that we are not there.
Yeah.
If we should go all the way to forking the protocol and forking the specs and just having, I mean, I think we have too many tags. I think we need to just start killing them from the current repo and removing all these stupid tags.
Yeah, no, there are a ton of unnecessary tags, especially on the image metadata stuff that introduce like 10 new tags or something like that. It's completely, I don't even use those. I don't use them. Yeah, so,
but you added, I saw. I was laughing with Fiatchef about this. I saw that you supported the addition of the uppercase E tag.
Yeah. That's an old conversation, isn't it? I still think, we're going to have, you know, mega threads like on Twitter have, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. Well, yeah, probably closer to tens of thousands of replies. And so like a thin client can't download that much. And so you'd want a window based on timestamp in order to load them lazily like you do with a feed. But then, you know, if you're windowing based on timestamp, you get a bunch of descendants and, you know, and I don't know, maybe there aren't that many descendants in those kind of threads. Maybe they're all top level comments. So maybe it's just like not even a problem. I'm not sure. But
But that sounds a lot like early optimization to me.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we're definitely not hitting that point yet. We're in the realm of hundreds at the moment. So, all right. I'll be more conservative about what I support. I support that.
I actually have a question for you. Did you see? Well, yeah, you did see it because you commented my need for like my version of Leap 41. Well, now it's mine and the Field Chef's version because I added him as an author. The identity, I don't even know how to call it because identity triggers people, key triggers people.
It's not recovery.
Rotation, migration. It's yeah, recovery, whatever it's called, but this idea of you get your NSAID compromised and you are not wrecked. There is a path to recovery.
Yeah, I think it's super important and I'm glad you guys are working on it. I think it's above my pay grade. I haven't been in Bitcoin that long, and so you know, I don't have a lot of experience thinking about
that's why my proposal is beautiful. Because it has zero crypto magic, like none. Because I've read every single time this topic came up, and the moment there was a talk about derivation path, HD, like all these things, the conversation went nowhere.
Yeah, yeah,
totally. Nowhere. And so I thought, okay, let's have one building block that is useful, like it does something. And once we have that, we can start talking about these other things, mm-hmm. right? But there is zero crypto magic on my proposal, which is, yeah, what I like about it.
Yeah, the one difficult thing is the open timestamps support, which is like just weird enough that it might make it hard to adopt. But like not a lot of people have to really adopt.
Oh, no, but it's very trivial.
Client.
Okay. It's very trivial. So to interact with an OTS, with an open timestamp, you're not talking to the Bitcoin blockchain or anything like that. You can do the stamping and the verification just with an HTTP call. So it's not like, okay, you need to have a Bitcoin full node to do the verification, you know.
Okay.
It's fairly trivial.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that rotation scheme makes a lot of sense for what it is. I do feel like so key rotation is closely tied to identity. You're basically saying my identity is moving from A to B, and what might make things easier if we assume that it's like automatically solved is having an identity like a handle system, a global namespace, and then you can use your authority over your handle on the global namespace in order to rotate keys. And, you know, obviously that has the problem of the global namespace being a global namespace. But you know, I feel like we're going to have to fix that at some point anyway, because NIP5s are a global namespace.
That way you're just...
But without exclusivity.
That way you're just moving... In that way you're just moving the problem to a different key, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, this is my key. Like you still have the same issue where, okay, my identity key is compromised and now I'm wrecked, right?
Yeah.
So it might be better, but you sort of still have the same problem.
Yeah.
That's like this proposal says, okay, your identity is you as a person, but you, Jonathan, you are not your NPub, right? you are a person and you are using this NPub. And some people can address you via this NPub, but when I'm tagging you on a post, I'm not tagging your NPub. I'm tagging your NPub as a way to say the identity, the entity HODLBOT. So I think identity is like this one step removed, and there is no key that, like there is no pub key that can represent that identity, because if you lose your key, You didn't go crazy, right? You didn't lose your consciousness. You're still you.
Yeah, and that's true of usernames too. Like even if you have a handle, you might want to change your handle at some point too. Yep. So your identity transcends all those things. And so the only real way to solve it is through social attestation. Even if you know all that means is just like I attest to this rotation. So yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm a big fan of the social. Side of things being the base layer for trust. You know, content analysis that's artificial can only go so far. So, yeah. All right.
Let's see.
Yeah. have you looked into, have you thought that much about like social like vouching? Cause like that's a good way to bootstrap new users too. New users come on and they just kind of like speak into the void and then they never really get picked up except for all the Derek Rosses of the world who, you know, hang out on the introductions topic. But, you know, ideally...
Derek Rossbot, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the... ideally, though, you know, a new user would be introduced by, like, someone they already know who is on Nostr, and then they immediately have one or more follows. You know, so, like, social social rotation seems like, you know, the same sort of thing. How complex is that? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, totally. No, yeah, I did think about it. So the way I was thinking, because on the spec I have, it used to be 30 days. I changed it based on Field Chef's input. I changed it to 60 days. At first I thought that 30 days was way too long, because if you lose your keys and you are basically not able to go to your new key in a way during 30 days, you know, that might feel like a really long time. But in reality, the 30 days or 60 days is a last resort when other things didn't work. So the way I was thinking is, when a client does an actual migration, so you say, you publish a migration event saying, oh, I lost my key. I got my key compromised, or, you know, I think that my key might be compromised, because on the content, you can write what happened. Like, you can explain why you are migrating. And you say, I'm migrating to this new key. There's the open timestamp verification stuff to make sure that, you know, there's nothing weird going on. And then clients that support this, they can say, for example, I call you and I'm like, oh no, yes, this is me, and this really did happen. Now you can heed this migration event that I published, and you could create just a kind one note, so all your followers can see it, tagging the migration event, saying, I verified out of band that this is the real identity. This is really Pablo, who is migrating to a new NPAP. And it could show, like, clients that support this could show a button saying, okay, I trust both this Pablo event and HodlBot to say that the new Pablo's NPAP is this other NPAP. So it's a bit of a trust situation. Where, okay, I see that Pablo communicated with HodlBot and with their Gigi and with whatever, with Fiat Chef out of band, and okay, they all say that he's migrated to this new NPAP. Okay, I don't need to wait for the 60 days. I can just hit a button saying, okay, based on my web of trust, the trust that I have that this migration is real is X, and I can apply to it.
Yeah, that seems pretty.
So I think there's a lot of, I think it's straightforward, and it leverages the current, like, the human interaction that already exists. Like, I think this is where the DID people go wrong. Like, they are trying to create a perfect system that doesn't leverage humans, doesn't leverage a friendship, and it's just normal human interaction. They try to create a self-referential system. And I think that's why they end up in these really complex scenarios, in these really complex specs, because they are trying to do everything within the system.
Totally.
Hey, if you and Fiat Chef and, like, a bunch of friends say, oh, Pablo migrated to this new key. Okay, yeah, I mean, it's signed by Pablo, like, by this Pablo key. It has the support of all Pablo's friends. Okay, it's probably true.
That could be a good new Nostr marketing slogan. Nostr runs on the magic of friendship, powered by the magic of friendship. So is there any reason that you wouldn't be able to, like, eagerly switch to your new key? Because the 30 days is basically to avoid an attacker doing that. But you could basically trust that new key immediately until a alternative migration event is published with an earlier timestamp. And then you basically just stop trusting that key that you had before. You might have some interactions on that key that would then be discarded, but they would basically be forgotten and marked as invalid. Is there any problem with that, or, like, would that be a vector for, you know, hijacking the social graph?
I didn't like the idea of, so say, for example, an attacker compromises your key, they publish a migration event, so they publish a whitelisting event, a migration event, and your followers immediately trust this migration event, which would unfollow your alt key, the one that you control, and they take your identity to this new key that they exclusively control. It would be so much harder to see where is the cutoff of where is this key, when am I talking to the identity that is compromised? It would require keeping a lot more state on the client, where they need to do this checking and this rollback of the kind three. I don't know. To me, it seemed so complicated to trust immediately. And that would be what any attacker would do, right? Like the happy path of an attacker is I compromise your key, I immediately migrate. So that would happen 100% of the time. It would be you lose access to your key, to your identity, and the attacker has exclusive access to your new identity. So to me, that seemed like a really bad idea.
Yeah, I also feel though that, you know, a 30 day how would the owner of the key be interacting with Nostr during that 30 days? Because they can't publish to the new key, but they can't publish to the old key. Does that mean
they're just locked out? They can't publish. No. So they can publish with the new key, right? So the way I was thinking is, if it were me, I would probably publish with both pub keys, with both keys, and then on the key, on the old compromise key, just on every single kind one, you're following the wrong key, follow me on whatever, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But there is nothing preventing me from using my, you know, obviously there is nothing preventing me from signing with a new key. I would definitely do that.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Well, yeah, we'll see. I'm glad you're working on that. That's the kind of like housekeeping that often doesn't happen on Nostr. People are so busy building products.
100%. And I think this is the last very important bit of Nostr that we still need to fix. I think this is one of those basic checklists that we must have in order to be taken seriously by the DID people.
Yeah. Wait, we're worried about what they think?
So no, I think this is this is important. We must have some kind of solution. I don't think this is the best solution. This is one solution that can work, and I think we'll have multiple competitors. Like the way Facebook does it, which to me really surprised me, is Facebook just by default, if you forget your password, they do social recovery. They say, okay, we see that you've interacted the most with these five people. We'll ask them to verify that this is really you.
Nice.
To me, that's insane because like Facebook is completely centralized. But they go to social recovery because they are at a scale where, regardless of the centralization, they cannot verify one by one all the people that have forgotten their password. So even Facebook, with the billions and billions and billions of freshly printed money that they have, they leverage the social graph. We can do the same thing as well.
Yeah. Why not? We have it all built in. And the social graph analysis is surprisingly simple. You know, for a long time, I was like, it's going to be computationally intensive, too hard to do on a client. Well, I finally added, Web of Trust score. And it's literally just how many people that you follow also follow this person. And, you know, maybe it's one or maybe it's 10. And I have a muting feature, too, that lets you mute anyone below that threshold. And mine is set at one. And so any bots or people like way outside of my network are just like not even included on Nostr, and it's really nice.
It's might set how easy it is. I've implemented it also on Shipyard. I actually implemented it at the NDK level, and it's so simple. It's incredible. It took me maybe 1 or 2 hours to implement it, and it's so effective. Like, it's very simple, but it's very effective.
It is. Yeah, and there's nothing better. Like NIP 5 is basically worthless in comparison with the social stuff. The one thing it doesn't cover is new users, of course. But I mean, you can bypass that. So, let's talk about relays a little bit. A while ago, you were advocating for relay sets. Has that evolved? Sell me relay sets.
Yeah. So the idea of relay sets is to be able to have. One thing that I think Discord did well, they did everything wrong, but the one thing that they did really well is like right within the UI, you are able to very easily switch from one soft identity to a different soft identity. So you can go from work to game A or to Mid Journey or to these other things, right? And you are like, you are the same person, but you have a different persona in each different setting. And the way I see it is, we can have these relay sets, which are basically like Discord servers, but instead of just being one server, you have like a bunch of different relays that provide different different payloads for your identity. So you could have a different follow list, a different kind of CR, a different profile data. You could have completely segregated personas. So for example, I have a philosophy relay set because I'm interested in philosophy. Well, my developer identity within a philosophy setting is not that relevant. So if my profile data says I build 10DK to a philosophy oriented audience, that's absolutely meaningless. Mm-hmm. It doesn't communicate anything, right? So I might choose to present myself as one version of me, based on what am I doing, right? Like you would have a different profile picture on your work relay set than on your, you know, whatever, your developer relay set. And I think relays is incomplete when we think about these things. I think the relay set, if you exclusively talk to a single relay, then I mean it's a little bit like the like the Mastodon approach, where that relay can censor you completely. So I think having the relay sets is a bit of a way to solve that. And you know that I'm very much into specialized relays that are do different things. So like Purple Pages is exclusively about gossip and your profile data and nothing else. It rejects all kind ones and all kind sevens and all the other stuff. And maybe you have Nosware or relay, the Nosterband relay that you use for search. So I really like this concept of, okay, you go to the philosophy relay set, you go to the developer relay set, you go to the, you know, whatever, memes relay set or something like that, and you can create your set of, like, if you think like in geometry terms, like your union of the identity that you want to represent and the kind of people that you want to see. So yeah, that's why I like that concept. It hasn't had any traction whatsoever.
Yeah, it seems hard with the existence of the gossip model, because gossip kind of like breaks that down, and you know, even more sophisticated versions of the gossip model kind of just grab stuff from whatever relay is suggested by any of your follower lists. And so if one of your follows has in their relay set one of your relays for your other identity, now you're sucking in stuff from your other identity, you're publishing to it. And I feel like relays would tend to just like, they tend to blur those lines, and I think that's probably the mm-hmm. function of relays is redundancy rather than segregation. You know, like the way I would approach this problem would be just creating a different pub key. So, you know, Coracle and a lot of other clients have that account selector thing, and also Nippo7 just added the account selection interface, which is looks really nice. I haven't played around with it yet, but you know, and then also. But you're talking about people still knowing that your identities are tied together rather than being completely separate and pseudonymous. That's an interesting idea, being able to tie multiple pub keys together. Maybe you could like have the pub keys attest to each other, and you'd have this like redundancy of identity. And then, you know, if one key gets compromised, the other key basically says, I'm going to revoke that attestation or something like that. And then, you know, attest this other one. Then you get social recovery within your own distributed identity. another place that this is
kind of, I was thinking about like, social
is so I've been talking to someone about badges. So it, you know, the idea around like digital ID stuff is that you only want to share as much information as you need to share for any given authorization thing. And so like a badge, you could create a one-off identity that has no name or anything, isn't tied to anything, and only and is awarded that badge. And then you can like basically flash your badge, and then someone doesn't have to know who you are in order to know that you're qualified in some particular way and vouched for by some badge authority. Anyway, I think that's an interesting idea I've been thinking about lately too.
Yeah, that is interesting. One of the things that I liked about relay sets, and actually the driving force behind relay sets is I do like global, like the what we used to use for global before, like last year, like say 1 year ago. it was cool, right? Like it was nice being able to go to global and see like all these random people. Now it's just completely useless, but at a really set level, and the way I've been thinking about global is if you're doing global within a scoped set of relays, especially topical relays, I wouldn't call it global. I would call it local. And say I connect to a relay set that is about philosophy, I can go to global and I can see all this discussion about philosophy. And to me, that seems interesting because in a way, I would get exposed to a discussion about a theme that I appreciate, but that maybe I wouldn't know about. You know, it's an unknown, but within the realm of something that I'm interested in. And to me, that sounds so appealing to be able to do that.
Yeah.
How you would be able to do that without pollution, it's really hard. One of the ideas that, and I actually want to implement, I just didn't have time, but I want to implement a data vending machine that does like content analysis, and it categorizes, because like language, the LLMs are really good at this, at categorizing things. So you could say, okay, I know that this pub key, I already assessed that this pub key talks about philosophy. Mm-hmm. Whenever they try to join the relay for the first time, I can just fetch the last month worth of notes, look at them and say, does this person talk about philosophy? And the LLM tells me, yes, 3% of the time or 10% of the time. If you are over a certain, let's say, threshold of 5%, I allow that pub key to write on the relay. And whenever they create a kind one without tagging any note, so it's a root event, I can look at that event and say, is this event about philosophy? If the LLM tells me it's not, then I reject the event. If it is about philosophy, I accept it. And then kind ones from pubkeys that are allowed are always allowed to write on the relay. So I don't have to analyze every single kind one. I don't know. It's a bit of a crazy idea.
No, I think it makes sense.
Computationally, it's possible.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, again, like Web of Trust and the social graph is the gold standard. Like if you have a particular set of pub keys that are pre-qualified to be interesting philosophy accounts, that's the way to go. But if you don't have access to that information, because it is relative to who you're actually, you know, serving, that content analysis is definitely better than analyzing tags, or I mean topics and just keywords and stuff, because those are easily gamed. So, you know, Nostra.tools is doing some good work in this area by making it easy for people to create their own topical relays. But I follow the Christpill relay, and it's, you know, it's like anything that says Christian or Bible gets onto the relay. But then, you know, people talk crap about the Bible or something, and then that shows up on there too. So it's a really, really fallible filter. But I do like that idea. I think topical relays is great. So speaking about the,
I think in general, like this whole aspect of Nostr is basically unexplored.
Mm-hmm.
And we are just using Nostr, like the relay architecture. We're just using it as client server. It's just client server. We just have redundancy with multiple servers. I think there's more to Nostr than this. And yeah, I just want to explore this part. Maybe it's retarded and there is nothing there, but maybe there is a bunch of really new things that we can do.
What do you think? This is like another huge conversation, but what do you think about the trade-off balance for private groups for relays versus encryption? So the benefits of encryption is that, you know, you can spread your group to multiple places and it's accessible to people. So you can do like a public listing for your group and then people can find it and then request access and you can either approve or deny. And it's kind of like this global thing in the global namespace and just sort of floats around like everything else. But then a specific relay means that you don't have to go through all the ceremony of all the gift wrapping stuff. And then, you know, your relay might like strip the signatures or something like that. So you basically trust the relay to say, I checked the signatures, they're good. I'm not going to give you the signatures so that your content doesn't leak outside of my relay. And so if you try to republish one of those notes, it gets rejected by everyone else because it doesn't have a valid signature. And like, you know, groups, relays, specifying one or two relays for a group seems like a good way to support a group, especially if you can do kind of dynamic authorization lists with like an NSEC bunker or something like that. If you need a shared key or, you know, just you could refer to a list of members as the, like a private list of members, even as the dynamic member list. But I'm really of two minds about this, and I'm working on encrypted groups right now, but I might just like, you know, once I'm done with that, I might just try building it all on relays and just see how it goes. But do you have any intuition about which of those approaches would work better?
I mean, in general, I always go for the least complex one. So the one stripping up the signatures is intuitively, I find it more appealing. It's just the level of trust that you have on that relay, because it's not just the content consumption, right? It's also what if the relay doesn't strip the signature and something that I said that has my signature is just published. Like you could imagine an evil relay operator just collecting the signatures. Yes, I'm serving everything stripped, but I'm keeping the receipts. I don't know. I personally would be more comfortable with the more complex approach, the gift wrapping approach.
Yeah, you can layer the two too. You know, a relay can have a pub key, and you can send all your encrypted stuff to the relay, and then the relay can unwrap it and then respond to filters. So you know, you have a 1059 that's totally opaque, but inside it's a kind 7 or something like that. And then you ask the relay, give me wrapped kind 7s, and the relay responds with all the stuff. So you can mix and match these models. So anyway, that's what I'm exploring right now. We were talking about philosophy, sort of meta philosophy. Is there any good philosophy that you've been reading lately or interested in?
Oh man, lately I have had approximately minus 5 hours per day of reading time. I think I'm becoming dumber by the day. not really.
Yeah.
Oh my. Having a 3-month-old is it's really, really, really hard. Especially this one doesn't sleep. It's unbelievable. I don't know how he's still alive, but he doesn't sleep. I don't have anything But to me, it's just I've discovered. So I did a lot of Vipassana meditation many years ago, well over a decade ago, and I found I found Vipassana meditation as a tool incredibly useful. It's very expensive in terms of the amount of dedication that it demands of you. Like if you don't do at least, at the very 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 least, 2 hours per day, you might as well just not do anything. You know, within the context of a reduced amount of time that we have each day, 2 hours of a day is relatively significant. But I found that the return on investment of those 2 hours were justified the investment.
Yeah, it's very true.
Then I discovered
Martin Luther is known for saying, "I have so much to do today that I shall spend the first 4 hours in prayer."
That sounds incredibly familiar. Yeah. Yeah, then I discovered, I mean, I didn't discover because I knew about it, but I discovered the practice of Stoicism. And that to me was very transformational because in a way they are kind of the same thing. It's just the tools that you use for Stoicism have a much larger return on investment. And they are more sticky. Like the behavior modifications that they make on you are way more sticky. With meditation, I've observed that if I didn't meditate for 2 or 3 days, I would start losing the equanimity and this ability of realizing that you are not your reaction to stimuli, that there is a segregation between this thing happened and I'm going to react, and realizing that you are not your reaction and that you can distance yourself from this reaction to it's very powerful. But I would notice that if I didn't meditate for a few days, then I would start reacting to things, again, instead of just noticing things. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Stoicism, it's so much easier to create this segregation, this differentiation between stimuli, reaction, and self. And I've noticed myself laughing a lot. In general, I laugh a lot about life. And I've noticed myself laughing a lot about bad occurrences in my life. I mean, not like super bad, but one time I bought like this very expensive car. I used pretty much not all my savings, but I used a significant chunk of my savings to buy like my dream van. I moved into my van. It was like my dreams. And one day I went climbing, and when I went back, I noticed that very clearly someone had broken one of the mirrors on purpose. It was like very, very obvious. And I started just laughing. I started laughing so hard. I was like, holy shit, this Stoicism thing really works. I can't believe I'm laughing so hard because someone broke my mirror. This is amazing.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, no, separating yourself from your circumstances and not allowing them to control you is a huge thing. One thing that I noticed about myself recently is just, you know, when you're driving, you don't see the other person, and all they are to you is an inconvenience. Yeah. And so, you know, when someone is driving slow in front of you, like 2 miles under the speed limit or something like that, you know, your first impulse is to actually hate them. And, you know, the difference between love and hate is like hate wants to destroy that person. It's self-centered, and so you need to discard them. And so, like, you know, the way to combat, you know, hate, harboring hate in your heart is through love and service. So you can either serve that person, or, you know, obviously if you're in a car, there's not much you can do except defer to the other person. But you know, you can pray for them, and you can start looking out for their interests rather than your own. And, you know, that actually brings a lot of peace, because, you know, I've heard there's a pastor around here that talks about bitterness, and, you know, bitterness is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's so accurate, right? Like, I try to feel compassionate about people that are like mean to me, or like a bunch of times on used to be on Twitter and now on Noster, someone is an asshole to me, like out of the blue for no reason whatsoever. And not every time, but I often think, well, this person must be having like a really either hard day or a really hard life.
Yeah.
And you can't feel like, oh, I want to kill them, because you're thinking, oh, wow, this person is like really struggling. And you are not doing that because, like, at least I'm not doing that because I want to be canonized. It's just better for everybody.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it really
it's,
is.
It's just this selfish instinct, like the selfish action is to not feel enraged and not just allow this reactivity to this mean note.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We are, my wife and I just started watching a movie called Jesus Revolution last night about the hippies and stuff, And there's a similar dynamic where there's this old pastor, he's got an old congregation, and they're all kind of grumpy about the hippies. And then a hippie shows up at his house and convinces him to open up his church to all the hippies and like start a band in the front and everything like that. And everyone is just really, really ticked off about it. And it's uncomfortable for everyone, but he's like, there's nothing else I can do other than open up to these people who have like huge problems. You know, like the drummer in the band at church has to take a break from being in the band because he has to go finish up his drug sentence. And like, man, I feel like I live a life pretty isolated from that kind of stuff. There are not a lot of people in my life who have real problems, but it's just so awesome to see when people actually interact with people who just need like friends and love, basically. They just don't have it, and so their life is a mess as a result. But I mean, that's community, I guess, for you.
Yeah, I the place where I'm now in Kalymnos, it's like a small island in Greece, and it's sort of like a place that's been kept in time. It feels like it's a century ago here. It's, I mean, right now the internet feels like that, but like I was telling you before we started recording that my neighbor, she's in her 70s. She still works. We live, you've seen the mountains up behind. We live in a very uphilly area. And she's going up and down and up and down on the mountains, just keeping after the roosters and the goats and like getting figs and getting, like she's working the whole day. And everybody here has this sense of community in a way that I never understood what community meant until being in such a small place like this one, where you have a problem and you can go and talk about it with the people that you know. Like I go to the shop here and the guy's like a closeted Bitcoiner because he doesn't know he's a Bitcoiner yet. He has every single trait of a Bitcoiner. Like you get to know the people in such a profound way. Even like I don't speak a lot of Greek. I speak very little Greek. But even within the language barrier, you're able to have like a meaningful relationship with the people here, and it's this sense of community is absolutely incredibly powerful.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. America's community is just so diseased. Everyone has, you know, the garage that sits in front of their house that they open up and then they drive into and then they close the garage and segregate them off from everyone else and interact through mass media instead of like, you know, physical. There is,
yeah,
like we said, for the physical.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I didn't used to agree with that, but now I definitely do. So after living in Spain, we moved to Costa Rica, and we were in the north of Costa Rica for 1 year. And then after Costa Rica, we decided that we wanted our daughter to speak really good English, so like native accent English. So we moved to the States for a while, and we went to Austin. And you know, one of the things, I had lived in the States before. I lived in Boston for a while. I lived in Blacksburg in Virginia for a couple of years. So I knew what to expect. But my wife, she always dreamt about living in the States. And she was absolutely shocked because how normal it was for people not to say hello, like yeah, with the neighbors. We didn't get to know a single neighbor. She would say hello to everyone and people would look at you like, what are you trying to sell to me? Or are you a child molester or something like that? And even we've noticed that within Amazon Fresh, like you would order something on Amazon and they would deliver it and they would knock on the door and just run away. Like the minimum amount of human interaction, the better, right? And yeah, it's a very American thing for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also like a very city thing because I've noticed this. I lived in Madrid and in Buenos Aires, obviously, and in Cordoba. in Spain, and whenever you're in city, that in cities, it's a little bit like that. That's the mechanics of human interactions. That's why I don't like living in cities. I like living in small areas like this one. Like the town where I live now is probably around 200, 300 people.
Yeah, the farther out of the town that I've ever lived, the closer I feel to my neighbors. We lived out kind of just in the middle of nowhere for a summer one time. And we actually like met our neighbors, even though they lived a quarter mile away from us. It was revealing. It was really nice. So we're just about out of time here, but I wanted to touch on kind of some events that are coming up. Are you going to be at Nostrasia? I think I saw your name on the schedule. Okay.
Definitely going to be at Nostrasia. Yes.
Cool. 100%. Well, I look forward to seeing you there. Miami, I miss all my friends, all my Nostra friends. So it'll be awesome. Speaking of physical community, we can do that again.
100%.
Cool. 100%. And then there's something coming up in February. Tell me about that.
Oh, yes. In January.
January. Okay.
We are Gigi and myself and the people behind Frima Data. We are launching Sovereign Engineering, which is, I was asked today to give like a word that defines the concept. And someone was saying, it's like an accelerator. I was like, no, it's not an accelerator. Okay, it's like an incubator. Oh, it's definitely not an incubator. I hate those words. It's like crypto, you know, their meaning has been changed.
Yeah.
And the way I proposed to refer to it is I forgot the word. Oh, yes. Like an experimental R&D lab. And the whole premise is that because of Bitcoin, because of Lightning, because of Nostr, there are a million new things that were not possible before, right? And creating like a Twitter client or creating a Bitcoin wallet are the things that must exist. Like we need those things, but they are not sufficient. It's a little bit what Jack referred to as the running from versus running towards, or, mm-hmm. or the way I understand it. So what we want to do is just bring a bunch of smart, capable, motivated visionaries and put them all together. And let's try to build the other stuff, the stuff that is not obvious, the stuff that is not very clear. Okay, Bitcoin, POS, point of sale system. Okay, Nostr. Okay, let's build a Twitter client, Reddit, Facebook. Okay, yes, those must exist. But what else is there? So the idea is a program. For 2 months, we're all going to be working together at in beautiful, sunny Madeira, which is a beautiful, beautiful location. And it's quite cheap, relatively speaking. It's quite cheap. It's going to be 21 people plus. We now have the Mutiny team who are going to be coming. And we're calling them the North Star because they are not experimenting with, okay, what should we build? They are already funded, they're already building something. So it's a little bit, they're at a different stage, but they are also innovators. The Mutiny wallet, even though I just said, oh, Bitcoin wallet is obvious. Mutiny wallet is a new thing, right? It's a different type of wallet. It's not just like same old, same old. They are innovating. They are pushing the boundaries. So this is the type of thing. And you're the first one to know publicly. When does this air?
Probably
like when do you publish?
A week from now.
Ah, okay. Oh, yes, I can say it. So one of the people that I'm super stoked that is coming is Stuart Bowman from the Satellite.Earth client, which is a client you must appreciate it because you have the same kind of vision.
Oh, dude, I love Satellite. It's very good. Yeah.
It's an incredible client. I'm so when he told me that he was coming, I was over the moon, which is a good reference to the client. he's joining and we want to design a cohort, like a team of people that will mesh well together and we'll be able to work well together. Not that they're going to be working on the same thing. Like everybody can work on whatever they want. It is freedom tech after all. I'm super excited. I think some very special things may come out of it. At least that's the idea. The way I phrased it is that our baseline is you staying at home and just doing the same things you've been doing. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the baseline that we must beat. Like if you come, if you make the go through the inconvenience of coming to Madeira and going through this experience, if you will, it should be better than you just staying at home. Like at the very least, it should be better than that. People are already productive and creating cool things at home. So hopefully it'll be even better than that. So I'm super stoked. This is our first cohort. Our next one is probably going to be around May.
Oh, cool.
Which I think works. Yeah, it works better for people that have their kids at school. So, you know, during the summer vacations, it might be better. We'll see. I'm super stoked about it. I think it's gonna be interesting.
I'm glad you're doing more cohorts because I can't make it this first one. When you announced it originally, you said DM us if you're stoked, and I DM'd you. I'm stoked if my wife will let me, and turns out she's pregnant. So not gonna happen this time.
No way. Yeah. Oh, damn. So, congrats, man.
That's April.
Amazing.
So we'll have a newborn, but maybe we can make it out there eventually.
Hell, yes. I mean, the whole, we've said, Gigi wrote, I mean, you know, Gigi, he wrote something beautiful along the lines of, we are not 19 years old. We're not going to be drinking Monster and doing 24/7 hackathon sprints.
Right, yeah.
This is very much grown-ups with families, showing up doing the work whenever we can.
Totally. Well, that's awesome. I'm excited for you anyway. That sounds like it'll be super productive and really fun. Is there anything else that you want to leave everyone with, or is that kind of it?
I don't know. Keep on building. I don't know.
Cool. Well, thanks, Pablo. It was awesome to catch up a little bit.
Thanks for having me, man. Really, really appreciate it. I mean, dude, like your podcast, it became one of my favorite podcasts out of the blue. In my mind, now you are a podcaster who writes some software every once in a while.
Sometimes I kind of feel that way.
Hey, it's not my fault. I mean, either become a worse podcaster or better software developer.
Challenge accepted. I'm not sure which direction though.
Oh, I don't know. You have very, very distinct career paths here. And I say that as someone that has stolen a bunch of your code and repackaged it on NDK. So
I've noticed that. I'm glad you did that because I haven't gotten around to it. So that's great. Cool. Well,
hey, I'm very familiar with the Coracle code base. So when I need something for NDK, I'm like, okay, this has already been implemented as MIT by someone that I respect. Why not?
Perfect. Well, that's great. That's the best way to do it. All right. Well, thanks, Pablo.